fossil fuel projects for oil fields or coal mining sites have brought land use conflicts for generations, often displacing people from their lands. That's one reason many are calling for renewable energy. And it's true that renewable energy brings benefits that are fairly obvious, a whole lot of kilowatts without the carbon pollution. Thing is, wind and solar energy farms require even more land than fossil fuel projects, bringing disputes to those places too. In fact, a new report finds a troubling pattern of human rights abuses in renewable energy and says it should set off alarm bells. That group is the Business and Human Rights Resource Center, and the program manager there is Jesse Cato, who joins us from Berlin. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So just to understand this, can you give me an example of a human rights abuse that you found is really part of a pattern in green energy?
Yeah. So, I mean, we at the Resource Center track allegations across all sectors. What we've seen over the last 10 years, though, is a growth in the allegations that we're seeing coming from renewable energy. Mm. And as you mentioned, those are occurring because wind and solar projects have a significant land footprint. And so that is resulting in a number of allegations coming in related to land rights and land violations, forced displacement. So Mexico is still, you know, a significant producer of fossil fuels. It still gets most of its energy from fossil fuels. It is trying to diversify, and it has quite a lot of land that is open and useful for wind projects. But those lands are primarily indigenous lands. And in Oaxaca, we've seen a significant amount of not just allegations of abuse, but really severe forms of, you know, conflict within communities. In 2018, there were 15 deaths that were related to one of the wind farms wanting to come in there, and discontent between different community members not having that social license to operate within the community.
So you're describing something happening in Mexico, but your report references Chile, Ethiopia, Kenya, Morocco, Scotland, Taiwan, the killings of indigenous activists against a hydropower plant in Guatemala. And so this is in a lot of places. And you give companies in general an overall score of 28 out of 100. I mean, that's not a very good score. What are the systemic problems you're seeing?
As I said, we specifically do see this, you know, the sharp end of this within indigenous communities. When we look at those companies, so within our benchmark, you know, we don't see any company policies around explicitly respecting land rights. We don't see explicit commitments to identify legitimate tenure rights holders. And this is, you know, sort of despite the fact that indigenous rights often intersect with those land rights. And just under one quarter of the companies we looked at had policies explicitly recognizing and respecting the rights of indigenous peoples. No company as well had any explicit policy that committed itself to non-retaliation against human rights and environmental defenders. And this is another growing area of concern within the resource sector.
And your team is finding retaliation happening?
Yeah, so in 2020, we recorded attacks against environmental and human rights defenders in the renewable energy sector. We recorded 30. We're also within our database of attacks. Indigenous peoples make up 40% of those attacks, even though they only make up 5% of the global population.
Yeah, wow. Well, Jesse, you use this term social license to operate, and I've heard that term a lot from fossil fuel companies, right? Oil drillers that need land, coal mining companies that need land, and they say they need buy-in from the local communities, otherwise they're in trouble. Are renewable energy companies doing any better than their fossil fuel peers on this question?
Not yet, but they certainly can. You know, I think the renewable energy sector is at a critical point in setting the tone for what the energy transition can look like. And it's, you know, there are two paths. And if it's going to replicate this profit-driven extractive model, which has caused significant harm, or is it going to be, you know, a new path for the energy sector, which has human rights at the center of it? But that window, you know, of opportunity is rapidly closing. Like any growing sector, there is only a small time to influence how it's going to operate going forward. And if we don't push for the renewable energy sector to sort of consider this and be on top of the human rights risks, we are going to accept a transition that is fast but is not fair, and it is absolutely going to replicate the abuses we've seen from the extractive sector.
Coal has been around for centuries, oil about a century and a half. Fossil fuel companies, today they have dedicated enemies, right, who wake up every day to stop them. If wind and solar companies aren't careful, could they be creating their own enemies?
Absolutely. I mean, I think anything where people are disenfranchised, where their voices are not heard, and where projects are going forward, you know, without legitimate consultation, there is a significant risk of, you know, not just reputational risk, but risk to the energy transition as a whole. And I think that's one of the differences and challenges that the renewable energy sector has to face. You know, we don't really have a choice about whether we transition or not. We know that is an imperative. What we do have a choice about is how we do that. And the sustainability of the sector is going to rely on companies thinking about new ways of operating, looking at co-ownership and co-benefit models, looking at different forms of consultation and saying, this is the way we're going forward.
That's Jesse Cato of the Business and Human Rights Resource Center. Jesse, thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.